This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, it's Drew.
Morning, Drew. Welcome. And welcome, everyone, to the plenary call here in the CTRT. I usually cheat and look at the number up there in the agenda, but I don't see a number to crib from. So it's some high number of plenary calls that we're celebrating today. Welcome, everyone that's in the Adobe Connect. Is there anybody that's only on the phone that would like to speak up and let us know that they are attending on phone only? All right. And is there anybody with any updates to their statement of interest? Perfect. Well, let's dive right in, and we've got a lot of stuff to discuss on the call today. And so we have some updated findings documents to go over. And so let's jump right in with trademarks, if we can, to just look at any changes that were made from the last time it was presented, and so we can all get on the same page about the findings. Jordan, is that you?
It's Dan's paper. I think there's been some minor edits to it in terms of language, but I don't think the conclusions have changed at all or there's been any significant new data sources. Is that right, Stan?
Yeah, that's correct. Jamie said the other day that he had a point to make, and I wasn't sure where it would go, so he's promised me some language in a red line, but anybody who wants to send red lines in at this point, I'm still the door is still open. I do have a question, however, a general question, which are these about the right length, or should they be shorter or longer than they are? I have trouble picturing what the final product looks like.
Stan, thanks for the question. I think these are about the right length. You are blazing the new trail of what the pros sections would look like, because everybody is generally using the little templates. But I think this is probably the right amount of explanation around each of these projects. And, the next step will be to see how we kind of roll these things up into a narrative, which is the document that Jordan has begun to construct. And, how we'll divide those two things up, I guess, is what's still in question. But as far as explanation of the data, I think what you're doing here is perfect. So it's a good model for everyone to follow.
That's fine. So if people have comments, please send them in the form of a red line to this. That's the most useful to me.
Thanks, Dan. Duplicates. Does anyone have any questions for Stan, I guess, before moving on? Okay, then let's move right to Megan and duplicates.
Actually, that one is me, Jonathan. This is Jordan Buchanan. So this actually hasn't changed in any significant way either. And just as a reminder to folks, it's harder to – I don't draw as strong an inferences from this set of data, but it roughly says that, in most cases, 92% of cases, the registrant, once again, we'll use the Big Shots Photography example, someone who registered bigshots.photography could have registered bigshotsphotography.com instead, but chose a new GTLD, so they're choosing the slightly shorter new GTLD variant. But in most cases, in 82% of cases, they couldn't have registered the exact string. So in the case of bigshots.photography, they could not have registered bigshots.com because that would already have been registered. As you'll see in the sort of bullet point document that we'll discuss later on, I find it a little harder to draw a conclusion from this data other than just sort of point out the fact that most of people are probably, in general, registering common terms at the second level, but in most cases, the entire string that they're registering would have been available on .com had they preferred to do so. And I don't think we've had any real comments or updates on this paper.
Thanks, Jordan. I guess it's tough to draw any kind of causation from this, except that there is some substitutability to be found among the new GTLDs for .com, since the rough equivalent is available in .com. If it was so much case that I need a .com address to be, you know, legit or something like that, then they would have done bigshotsphotography.com.
That's right, and it's notable that, you know, we do spend some time talking about duplication, and it is the case that many names registered in GTLDs and the new GTLDs are registering duplicates of strings in .com, and so some of that may be defensive or duplicates for other purposes that are outlined in the Nielsen survey. But people that are registering in the new GTLDs seem not to feel like they need to register the duplicate in .com, so that's an interesting phenomenon at least. So to Megan's question that none of these are duplicates, that second statistic, the 92% of these, like in Jonathan's case, bigshots.photography, Jonathan could have registered both, right? He could have registered bigshots.photography and bigshotsphotography.com, but almost everyone who's registering in the new GTLDs isn't registering the that equivalent string in .com, at least for the entire string. So, I don't know. That's a somewhat interesting phenomenon. There's a separate study underway that maybe Aliza, or a separate little bit of data analysis underway that I think we've clarified what we want from staff with Aliza. But this actually basically just tells us that of the people that registered in new GTLDs, most of them could have gotten that string in .com. What we don't know is of people who are registering in .com, how many of them could have registered that exact string in a new GTLD and chose not to. So ICANN's trying to do an analysis of looking at strings in .com that were registered over the past quarter, I think, and look and see how many of those end with exact matches of new GTLDs and then weren't registered in the equivalent new GTLD. So that will help us understand whether people, what fraction of the population sort of is choosing to stick in .com even though they could have registered in one of the new GTLDs.
That makes sense. Any other questions? Oh, Stan, you have your hand up?
Yeah, I actually think this is a particularly important result. It tells us something that we don't have anywhere else about substitutability, and I think it's very important. I didn't appreciate this when it was first proposed. I think we should try to do as much as we can with it. It will tell us at least something about how much substitution there is.
Thanks, Dan. That was my opinion as well. I think it is very interesting. And what's funny about it for me, obviously, is that I'm one of the test case, and I couldn't necessarily tell you why I chose Big Shots Photography over bigshotsphotography.com, other than maybe just having an inherent curiosity or something like that, but that can't explain the whole percentage.
There's a concept in economics called revealed preference, and we are observing some choices based on preferences. That's important. I'm sorry.
Right. Thank you. David Taylor.
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. I was just wondering as well on this, looking at it, we've obviously got a big difference in potential value of the domain name as well, which may affect choice. I don't know whether bigshotsphotography.com was purely available or whether it was already on the secondary market, for instance. I think as soon as we see names on the secondary market and they're in any way generic, the price can be considerable. And I say that from a lot of experience. If you look at the example of bigshotsphotography.com and bigshots.photography, the price on the secondary market of the .com will be many, many times higher than the .photography. And you see that time and time again, because when we sort of go after domain names and we might secure them. If we've gone for something like bigphoto.com, we could be paying, you know, several hundred thousand or more for it, whereas you then look and it's suggested to get big.photo and you'd pay $6 for that. So there's a massive difference in price, which is something we might want to, I don't know how we can use that or look at it, but I think it's something which is certainly interesting, as well as the offers which you see from registrars. If you don't get your .com, then you get some of them are cleverly offering the .photo itself. So just throwing that in for comment.
Sorry, Jonathan, it's Jordan again. I just wanted to comment. What this paper is telling us, though, is actually the opposite of that, is that most people could have registered, like in Jonathan's case, he could have registered bigshotsphotography.com. It was available, still is available, I assume. And instead, he registered in bigshots.photography. So there wasn't the, he didn't get to the point that he went and tried to find bigshots.photography. I mean, bigshotsphotography.com, and it was too expensive. He could have gotten that. Now, it's what we do see is that most of the time, the exact match for just the second level screen, so bigshots, bigshots.com probably was taken. And so Jonathan's goal, what Jonathan really cared about was just the second level domain part as opposed to the entire string, then you're probably right. But if you care about the entire string as opposed to just the second level domain, then you know, generally speaking, you could have gotten the alternative in .com. So it's a little bit of that makes it a little bit more of a complex dynamic, and it probably depends a lot on what the registration is. More generic words at the second level will probably be quite popular in both .com and the new GTLDs, and quite expensive in .com, as you point out.
Yeah. Maybe just comment on that.
So ironically, Jordan, I go to second. Oh, sorry. I was just saying, ironically, now when I go to findbigshotsphotography.com, it's available as a premium domain.
Huh, interesting. So someone probably did.
I always wonder if people pay attention to the things you search for as a source of speculation, because I don't recall it being a premium domain when I looked the first time. But now it's about $2,000. And big shots of photography was more expensive than normal .coms as well, which is, I think, is often the case with the new GTLDs. So that's interesting also. But so, David, I think your point is well taken. I think that these particular numbers reflect non-premium availability for these particular examples. Is that right, Jordan? I mean, we're looking at things that are available without. In the primary market, right?
Yeah, so the one confusing point is, so in the legacy GTLDs, premium and secondary market are basically synonyms because all of the legacy GTLDs have price caps, and so they're not able to charge non-standard prices for particular names. The new GTLDs have the option of pricing their inventory sort of as they see fit. So often you'll have premium names in the primary market in the new GTLDs. So what we don't know is, like, are there some people who are paying even above the sort of standard wholesale price in order to register in the new GTLDs when they could have registered a standard-priced .com? That would be really interesting to see, but I don't think we have any way to get at that information because we don't have transactional data from the registrar.
That's right, Jordan. And maybe we need to come up with new vocabulary for this, but Network Solutions that I just did the search on called it a premium domain, and what they mean by that is that it's available in the aftermarket and with whom they have some relief. So it's not as though it's a premium domain in the sense of the new new GTLDs. They're calling it premium, so that's. That's all I wanted to confirm for David, is that the numbers you're looking at are available in the price cap a primary market for the legacy GTLD for .com. Does that make sense? They're all available at GoDaddy. Could all be gotten at GoDaddy for whatever their base price is.
They're available on Google Domains for $12.
Okay. That's what I was trying to ask. David, is do you still have another question, or is that old head?
Yeah, no, I do. I think it's a very interesting discussion because this really ties in with everything we're looking at and the way it completely depends how you look at things on pricing. And exactly as Jordan says, I mean, premium name, secondary market makes a big difference in this. And I think you've actually seen that on the scenario is a lovely one to look at. The BigShotsPhotography.com, as you say, originally was available a bit long. You preferred BigShots.Photography. Arguably, I'd say that doesn't justify that we should have any new GTLDs whatsoever, because one of the ideas of the whole new GTLD program was there's nothing available in .com anymore, so we have to extend and widen the to the right of the dot, shall we say. And there you've demonstrated actually that the new GTLD itself was more attractive to you, even though the BigShotsPhotography.com was available. And then that point where I said before about the clever registrars looking at what's done, I don't even think it's necessarily down to the search. It may well be the search, but as soon as it's registered, once you've gone for BigShots.Photography, that's picked up, and I think that is what has likely made BigShotsPhotography.com a premium name, because someone's gone in and got it and said, ha-ha, this guy might come for this, now we can get some return on it. So that skews the entire pricing of what's going on, and it shows the importance of the premium names and how they're coming through, and how at the end of the day I think consumers will be looking at this sort of thing, and, you know, is that practice a good one, a bad one? Should we be commenting on it, and how do we look at it?
Thanks, David. Carlton, I'm not sure I understand your questions. So the things in Jordan's paper are not secondary market transactions. They're primary market transactions, both in the case of the GTLDs and the available buttons that were the available string when the study was done. Does that make sense, Carlton? All right. Any other questions for Jordan? So I'm with Stan. I think this is really interesting data, even if we don't completely understand it. Do consumers trust new GTLDs? Is that Drew? Drew, are you on mute?
Sorry, I was on mute. Yes, I was on mute. So this paper was done by Laureen. And so I could certainly go over it, but she is the primary architect of this one. So
no, that's true, but she's also given a policy, and you're like her.
Oh yes, I just meant for purposes of explaining any nuance or whatnot. So what Laureen did for this one.
If you're prepared to discuss.
Oh sure. So what Laureen did for this one is she used the data from the Nielsen survey and was able to at least dive into the trust aspects for consumers with regard to different scenarios with new GTLDs. And so, overall, as we learned when we were in Vienna, trust seems to be directly tied to how familiar a consumer is with a domain name. And so that comes through in this as well. And trying to find which page it's on. So along with with there being trust in your GTLDs, if you guys look at, starting on page 3, there's a nice breakdown where because consumers were asked about trusting, giving sensitive information, two different types of domain names, the websites with different types of domain names. I think that's kind of an interesting breakdown there, where on the one hand, as a whole, you see trust in the new GTLD, but then when you're talking about giving sensitive information such as an email address, home address, et cetera, that's where it's completely different when you are actually looking at .com compared to anything else. And so that's where the trust diverges, is once you start drilling down, getting specific, and giving respondents an example. And so if you look there, something like an email address really is treated almost as sensitive as healthcare info for those purposes. And I thought that was kind of interesting with new GTLDs, whereas with .com, you see a lot of variation where, sure, I'll give my email address to almost any .com, but my healthcare info, I won't give to, nearly as many websites. And particularly if it's a new GTLD, then I certainly won't be as forthcoming with it. And so I think that is significant enough that we can definitely make some conclusions that when you're looking at how familiar people are and you're looking at awareness, that is likely one factor going into trust in a very specific way with sensitive information, and that's something that would affect consumer behavior in this realm. And then, also of note was, and I'm sorry, I'm trying to remember where in the document these parts are. Also of note with the trust thing is the taking precautions, I thought. So that is on page 4. And so you see that as far as at least how the responses went, you're getting close to 3/4 of people saying that they'll take precautions. I am maybe looking at the wrong part. Oh, yeah. Okay. You're looking at the trust of the actual new GTLD system as a whole. So on the one hand, like I said, we have these numbers about trust visiting them, giving them information, but then trust as far as what the system is doing in terms of taking precautions, as far as who gets a domain name, and this kind of ties into what we're looking at with other papers with regard to safeguards. I found that pretty striking, that you're getting 3/4 of people trusting, on the one hand, that the new GTLD operators are actually being restrictive, are making sure only the right people are actually getting domain names. But then on the flip side, they are trusting them in these specific examples of sensitive information much less than they do with legacy GTLDs. And so you can see that reflected in 4A. I apologize for taking a second to find that. And so those were there's a lot of other good data in here. But just hitting at the core aspect of trust, I found that those to be some of the most striking contrasts, I guess, with .com.
Thanks, Drew. Does anybody have a question for Drew on this? Those are some interesting observations. There's still a ways to go on trust, apparently. Okay. Thanks a lot, Drew.
Sure, yeah. But
so the next step.
Pay close attention to that one, because that one goes through all that good Nielsen data.
Right. So please do go through this and things, because the next step will be to translate this into a document similar to the ones that Stan has been preparing in prose form and integration into the whole. And it'll be harder to pick at individual arguments in that form. So if you have an issue, please raise it with Laureen sooner rather than later. Okay, so next is we're looking at just some quick updates of amendments to documents. So the first one is industry structures. Stan, is this your document? Are you able to discuss the Delta?
This is mine. It's very much the same as the previous version. It has a bit more detail on concentration among registrars for a given registry. It's still waiting on a table that analysis group produced earlier, but I think they were going to revise Project 6, so I'm curious as to the timing on that. But other than that, it's pretty much in the form that I hope it'll end up in. So, Elisa, do you know where that Project 6 table is?
Hi, sorry, I was on mute. Hi, Stan. This is Elisa. I think the table should be coming soon. I don't have an exact date, but analysis group has been working on finishing their report, so now they're working on revising tables for you all.
No, that's great. As soon as we get it, I'll just pull it in. It's an obvious placeholder for it, so that's great.
Is there any place you feel like you're stretching, Stan, that you want to draw attention to for discussion?
No, I think Jordan's summary of this piece, I think it's quite right. I think the point I'm trying to make here is fairly basic point, which is you don't have to be vertically integrated, unless you might want to be, but you don't have to be vertically integrated in order to enter as a new GTLD. I think that's an important point. I guess the other thing I sort of became clearer as I went along here is that, and maybe this is clearer in this version, is that concentration among back-end providers for the new GTLD is much lower than concentration among back-end providers for the legacies. That probably reflects the fact that .com has a single back-end provider. So it's that side of the market is, if you look at new GTLDs, it's a lot less concentrated. Still another reason for my believing that the availability of those inputs facilitates entry. The one part that there's been a sort of back and forth on is this question of whether or not small new GTLDs will survive. Obviously, a lot of them are quite small. So I added some language that I think that was suggested by Elisa that indicated that perhaps some of those guys never expected to be very large. They were small and specialized, and maybe they will survive in the long run. So that points in here as well. But this looks pretty much like it did a couple of weeks ago other than that.
Thanks, Dan. Anybody have any questions? Megan,
comments,
go ahead.
Comments are still invited in writing.
Thanks, Dan. Megan? Oh, no. It looks like she put her hand back down. All right, Lynn, let's continue through these. Benefits versus confusion. Who's there?
Hi, Jonathan. That's Megan's paper.
Megan. Are you on mute, Megan? Megan, we can't hear you if you're speaking. The mic's not working. Okay, so you'll send Thomas in. Mic is on, but not working. Okay, so Megan, do you in typing want to highlight anything in particular that conclusions you're drawing that you want to draw people's attention to, or should we just table this for the time being, and we'll try to get a call out to you. But Pam, can we try to call Megan? Thanks. So we'll move on and come back so that we can actually hear Megan's lovely voice. So let's go to concentration ratios.
So, John, this is Jordan. I think this is my doc.
Thank you.
I think literally nothing has changed in this document since we last discussed it. I think, in general, this is the document that shows, I mean, it mirrors what Stan just said about back-end providers. I think generally for new gTLD registries, if you look at the, if you define the market as being just the new gTLD registries, concentration is fairly low, certainly lower than the levels at which the U.S. DOJ considers to be sort of interesting to look at. If you include the legacy gTLDs in the market and say the market is actually all the gTLDs put together, then suddenly the market looks quite concentrated and is well above the levels that the U.S. DOJ would consider to be interesting to look at. You know, I think in general what we're seeing is that although the new gTLDs are resulting in marketplace that's less concentrated overall, they are new enough, and the installed base of .com registrations in particular, but legacy gTLDs in general, are such that they haven't really chipped away that much at the effect, although it's a noticeable effect on the overall market concentration as well. Once again, this depends somewhat on how you end up defining your marketplace, but for these hypothetical definitions of either just new gTLDs or combined legacy plus new gTLDs, you can see the effects. This paper also takes a quick look at the concentration in the registrar marketplace, which is roughly unchanged since the introduction of new gTLDs, which is probably, I think, unsurprising given that it's the same pool of registrars selling both new and legacy gTLDs. And then finally, there's a, I think actually I haven't updated this paper with the right number from Stan, but it's one update that should happen. The back-end market, the dynamics in the back-end market roughly mirror the gTLD market as a whole. The new gTLDs, the back-end market for new gTLDs is relatively unconcentrated, or relatively less concentrated, but it's still quite concentrated, as Stan just pointed out a minute ago, if you look at the market including new gTLDs. I mean, sorry, including legacy gTLDs. So, I don't know if people have any questions or comments, but there's nothing particular that's changed in this doc.
Any questions from anyone? Jordan, I guess this is something that came up a little bit in Vienna, where Stan I want to tease him and say he said something disparaging, but I think he was attempting to say something objective about the amount of movement that was created by competition from the new gTLD program. And I had a sense that both you and I thought that the 9% number that I recall us looking at was somehow significant when looking at a single year against 20 years, and so I wonder if we need to find a way to showcase this number in a purely objective way and ask the question of the community in the engagement session, for example, about how to interpret that number, because I think you and I thought it was significant and Stan didn't think it was significant, and so some of that might have to do with how it's judged in a sort of subjective way, right? once we have the objective data, how it's said subjectively is something that might be worth drawing attention to for community input. It's just a thought. I got some hands raised as a result of that. Stan, go ahead.
Actually, you're referring to a different paper, I think. There's a paper which I now call Analysis of Market Penetration, and the discussion we had was whether 9% was large or small. I think I've tried to fuzz the language in that a bit to assuage your concern, but this is a case of we should just look at the actual document. It's hard to discuss whether we've got the right nuances at this level at a kind of call like this. So I invite you to look at the Analysis of Market Penetration by New GTLDs piece and tell me whether you're more satisfied than you were in
the beginning. I apologize. Yeah, I got the That's my bad. I conflated the two of these documents.
But I don't take umbrage, as you know.
I know you don't. Jordan, were you going to say the same thing?
No, I was going to say something slightly different, which is, I have a hard time wrapping my head around whether that 9% number is big or small or what I expect from it. I think the more interesting related finding, and this is pointed out in the sort of bullet point doc, is that when you look at what's happening in the new registrations of domain names, and you look at new GTLDs as a whole, they represent, there's been about as many new registrations, about as much growth from new GTLDs as there has been from the legacy GTLDs since the introduction of the program. And similarly, there's been about a similar number of registrations and growth in the ccTLD market. And so when I look at that as a whole, I sort of draw from that new GTLDs as a whole are providing like quite a reasonable alternative to .com, and that fact that there's just as many registrations in new GTLDs as .com, I think highlights that in a way that's a lot more tangible to me than trying to look at the delta in the current.
Wow.
I guess Megan got some audio.
Can you hear me now? I tried switching devices. Does that work?
Yes, we can hear you.
Can you hear me now? You can hear me now.
I can hear you, but you're coming in about like 3 people.
Yeah, there's a lot of echo, Megan, so... To mute when you're not talking.
Okay, I'll tell you what. Why don't you... You've seen this document already once before, so why don't you just put any comments in... and it's slightly adjusted according to the comments that were made the last time. And why don't people just send me any changes or adjustments or questions that they might have? I think that might be easier. For some reason, none of my devices let me speak. And I love to speak, as you know.
Still feels like 9% is a big number, given the amount of time, versus the amount of time that went into building up the numbers in the first place. But it's not even the document we're discussing, so I apologize for that. Stan, do you have another point to make?
Just two things. One is just to Jordan's point. He's quite correct. They got half of the increment. The question is, but that's only sort of half the story. The other half is, well, how fast is the overall market growing? And even though you get half, you still end up with 9%. But again, it's sort of a matter of how we write it. I think that discussion, it's not this paper either, has a discussion drawing on some of an earlier study done for ICANN by, I think, KPMG, which talks about how quickly new GTLDs get to essentially full maturity, not using the term they use. And it takes a while, and I think that's a general point that we have to make throughout. That is, we're observing this in early innings, and the numbers may be bigger later on. Their shares may be bigger. I sort of cited an earlier study that says, I forget exactly, after 36 months, I think new GTLDs, these are the earlier ones, not this set, were about 75% of the number they eventually reached. So it takes a while to get to full maturity. And the paper now says that, not this paper.
Great, Sam. That sounds right. Thank you. That's definitely good context for the market going forward. Any other questions on this paper? I apologize for derailing things. All right, let's move on then. I think we're through our little amended pieces, and we're talking about the high-level findings document now. Is that right? So, Jordan, take us through. Yes, hello?
This is Carlton. Can I ask a question?
Yes, of course. I didn't see your hand.
And this is for the competition sub-team, the alternative identities. How do we respond to the information that is contained in the registrant survey about alternative identities? Where do we slot that in terms of competition? Is that relevant? Do we?
Jordan, go ahead.
Yeah, so Carlton, that's a good question. What I think I need to take a closer look at is to see the nexus between the new GTLD program and the alternative identities in particular, as opposed to, like it's quite obvious to me that these alternative identifiers are competing with domain names as a mechanism to identify content on the internet. The question I have is whether that trend is independent or related to the new GTLD program in particular. And so I think I think someone that could be me, it could be someone else, could go back to the Nielsen survey and look to see if there's crosstabs or relevant information that helps us understand that. I think at the very least it draws calling out to some extent. But if we saw, for example, that new GTLD registrants were substantially more or less likely to use the alternative identifiers, that might be something particularly interesting to call out. But if we just see that in general these identifiers are competing with domain names as opposed to the new GTLDs, and there doesn't seem to be an effect on the program between them, it might just be more of an interesting side note that some other effort at ICANN might want to take a look at, which is just to understand the sort of intersection of domain names and other identifiers as a general concept as opposed to relate it to the new GTLD program in particular.
Thanks, Jordan. That'd be
interesting. Jordan.
I
Good, Calvin.
Talking about me, or?
Yeah, were you done speaking? Oh, no, sorry, Carlton. Sorry, Calvin.
Oh, yes,
Carlton,
yes,
are you,
yes,
are you done?
Yes, Jonathan, okay. I was just mentioning that Jonathan would follow up.
I think one of the things that might be interesting, Jordan, and again, we may not have any way to assess this, is, you know, this big development in alternative, you know, whatever we're calling them, identifiers on the internet, could be having an effect on the growth rate of the domain name system generally, which then, as Stan suggests, has an answering impact on the speed with which the new program is able to make incursions into the overall concentration of the DNS marketplace. If the growth is slowed in any measure because of Facebook and other things like that, then it's not an impact created by the new GTLD program. It's just something that may be affecting its ability to gain market share with the same speed it might otherwise. I don't know. Maybe that's too much of a stretch, but that's one thing that sort of jumped out at me as a possibility. So staff, I guess let's look at trying to do the cross tab with Nielsen to see if we can identify any unique intersection between the responses given about alternative web identities and users of new GTLD programs. We probably need to take that offline to figure out what that project looks like, but let's make a bookmark to look at it. Jordan, do you want to lead a discussion on the document that we have in front of us?
Sure. So for context, everyone, there's a couple things going on that led to the creation of this document. First is the impending presentation that we're going to give to the community in Hyderabad. And there, I think by necessity, we're going to have to present some boiled down or summarized version of the findings that we're making. And so I thought it would be helpful to start to think about what the content of that would look like. Secondly, I think I've been toying with trying to think about like what the eventual structure of the narrative is going to look like. As everyone has seen, Stan's done some great work in like turning these high-level findings into prose, but right now they're sort of standalone pieces on specific topics, and I wanted to start to think about how all of the sort of bits of information might fit together. I haven't actually made very much progress on the second front, but this is part of the point of pulling things into a summary form. And I guess I'll add there's a third motivation as well, which has just come to light in the last few days, and that's to inspire discussion around how we start to take things even further than just sort of summarizing the data and starting to draw conclusions, I guess, that will lead us to our recommendations. And that last point, I think, is probably the most controversial and probably the place where I hope that we'll spend some time in discussion today. I see Megan's already leading this off in the chat. And so what I've done is taken the papers right now and just sort of, at least on the competition and consumer choice side, and just tried to tease out the sort of essential high-level findings from each of those documents. So in the document that you see in front of you, all this stuff in plain text is I think, hopefully just a fairly neutral restatement of the data and the factual inferences that we can draw from that. And then, secondly, in one particular case, I think we'll add some more of these. I recognize that the story didn't quite hold together without a little bit more information, and so I've added something that didn't come from the paper that was put together, but it's a little bit more of a little bit more data or thought that is generally not going to be as well substantiated as the stuff that's in plain text. So that's in italics. And so it could be that that would be an area where we need to do a little bit more research in order to substantiate it. And then thirdly, in bold, I've tried to put together more conclusory statements, trying to say, what do we think about the information that we've seen in the plain text? And this is to, I think, if we can all agree eventually on what we want to say in this bold part of the text, I think that will much more sensibly lead to what we want to recommend than just these data points. Because the data points on their own are interesting facts, but they don't tell us anything about what we should do. And I think we need to know, we sort of need to understand what we agree this data means in order to get to the point that we can have a conversation about like what we should do as a result of this. So I will probably leave it there. People can look at the document itself. It's relatively short and compact. I see Kylie's already got his hand up and Megan's making some points in chat. And I'm happy to address those. But actually, maybe, Jonathan, I don't know if you want me to quickly address Megan's chat points or jump to Kylie. I'm fine either way.
I guess since Megan had her comments out first, why don't you address Megan's points, and then we'll call on Kylie.
Sure. Okay, great. So Megan's, I think, made 2 points in chat. Megan, correct me if I'm missing any of them. So the first relates to the industry structure section, where I write, most GTLDs have only modest number of registrations. I actually think that's the uncontroversial part of the statement. Most of the new GTLDs are quite small. 90% have less than 10,000 registrations, even once we take out .brands, for example. On the other hand, we've seen very few failures. The only TLD that's actually stopped working, that sort of went through delegation and then turned off, was a .brand, so it's not even a case of someone that was out for commercial registrations. As far as I know, they never actually used the GTLD for anything. There's been a small number of new GTLDs that were, I think, designed for public consumption that have been sold publicly. And you might conclude from those that they weren't able to make it commercially under their original business structure. They've generally been sold to portfolio applicants, so people with a broader portfolio who might be able to have an economy of scale that would make the economics work. And there's been a few more transactions. ICANN would have a list of assignments. I don't know if that's public information, but assuming it's public information, ICANN could give us a list of assignments to see whether or not there's things that weren't publicly sold that maybe changed hands through a private transaction. And those might represent, for whatever reason, the original business model work. And so even though it didn't work for the original applicant, it could be that it's working now. What we haven't seen is any of those TLDs have to, go into Ebero, which is the emergency process, or be taken over by ICANN, or actually go out of business. I conclude in my sentence from that because as Stan points out, these inputs, the fact that you don't need to have your own retail site and the fact you don't actually need to run a backend, you can just pay someone else to do it, may mean that it's possible to make these things commercially viable even without very many registrations. And so even though we see a very small number of registrations, it may be that these TLDs will continue to operate even with these very low registrations volumes. So I think Kylie and Megan have both pointed out, we don't really know whether that's true or not. It could be they're just loss leaders or so on. I guess, I mean, that's true. It could be true, but the data we have so far, at least, doesn't indicate that that they're going out of business. And we haven't seen any indication that these TLDs are not sustainable with the current registration volume. So we'll have to think about how to word that. But, you know, right now, I think the data tells us that even at low registration volumes, so far, through 2 or 3 years, the TLDs are remaining solvent, at least. And Megan suggests we can adjust the wording. I'm fine with that. You know, we can figure out exactly the language, and we can indicate, I think we should indicate this very early, so it's very hard to draw these inferences. But we don't really have a lot of data saying that we definitely don't have data saying that it's problematic to have these very low registration volumes. So then Megan's other point relates to, I can't see the doc anymore. The section on market structure, where I wrote, in aggregate, new gTLDs represent a significant portion of the growth in domain names since the launch of the program, roughly equivalent to either legacy gTLDs or ccTLDs. Megan, I think you and I both agree on what I'm trying to say here, which is, like, altogether, the new gTLDs represent about the same amount of growth as the legacy gTLDs. But I think we also both agree that individual gTLDs are mostly quite small, as we pointed out in the previous point. So we can figure out wording to reflect that. So I think it's possible if we put these two sentences, the point we were making earlier about most of the gTLDs being quite small next to the statement that in aggregate they're about the same size as the legacy gTLDs, that may help provide some useful context. And Carlos, to your point, I did get all of your comments in the Google Doc. I saw that they exist, but I haven't yet had time to review them this morning. So I think probably with that, we can go to Kylie.
Kylie. Megan, go ahead and type comments. We can come back to your comments since you're typing. Kylie, go ahead.
Who will go ahead? Me?
You, Kylie, go ahead. Your turn, yes.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, actually, just Jordan mentioned that the wording here is has no support and seems to be unsure, saying that may make it possible for many small GTLD to continue to operate. So I provided in my email my experience and wording for that. I believe it's much more natural, much more neutral. That is what she says, that as the time period of their existence is still limited, this is the same as Megan pointed out, and as their cost structure are further to be explored, it remains to be seen how many of them will survive over a longer period of time. I think this statement will be much more neutral. By the way, I fully agree with Jonathan's email of the day before yesterday, a path to go forward, which basically saying that if we do not know, we just know, just say we don't know, instead of making some unsupported, conclusions without support. So I would prefer this to be changed and wording for Jordan's version to be changed to be much more neutral. Okay. Regarding the market structure, are we to the market structure already? Hello? Yeah. Okay. Regarding
Kylie,
the market structure.
Kylie?
Hello? Yes.
Kylie, maybe give Jordan a chance to address the first point.
Okay, sure. Go ahead.
Can you hear me, Kylie?
Please. Yes.
Thanks.
I hear you.
Jordan, do you want to address the question?
Yeah, so I mean, I think this bears further discussion by the entire group. I guess I disagree that it's a neutral statement to say this thing that could possibly happen that we see no evidence for actually happening is something that we need to, like, is a significant factor in our considerations, right? Like, I think it's fine to call out the fact that it's early days and that it is possible that the current trend will not persist. But there's literally no evidence for the fact that any of these GTLDs have failed or are likely to fail. And so I think making a statement like, we don't know whether they're going to fail or not, like, is, while it's true, it creates an implication that, like, that's a significant concern that's frankly not borne out by any of the data that we have. What I wrote is much more aligned with the data, although I can understand why people are concerned that it's early and we don't want to go too far down the path of saying everything's okay. We just don't have any data whatsoever to substantiate the notion that there's a risk of failure by these GTLDs at this point. It just hasn't happened yet. And so it is fine, I guess, like, even if we had data saying that the fixed costs were higher than what we expect the revenue of these GTLDs to look like, that would at least better raise the concern, but we don't even have that data present in our report right now. So I'm fine adding a caveat that it's early, that we don't know, like, we probably shouldn't draw too much inference from the trend we see so far, but the trend right now is that despite the fact that there's low registration volumes, that none of these have failed as a result.
Well,
thanks, Jordan. I think that another way to, Kylie, just hang on just a second. I think another way to think about this is whether or not there's sufficient data to make a recommendation about it. And I think that will resolve the differences between the two positions, because I think if I can underscore Jordan's point, in the absence of evidence, what we cannot do is make a recommendation based on that supposition. So what we're likely to do in this particular case is recommend nothing because we don't have evidence suggesting a high failure rate. We don't need to make a recommendation about that infers that. We can make the neutral statement that as of this date, we don't have evidence of a likelihood to fail. I mean, I would like to underscore Jordan's point, and I think the real issue is about whether or not that we definitely need evidence before we can make some recommendation. Kylie, go ahead.
May I speak? Yeah. Well, I don't think I'm making any recommendations. I'm only saying it remains to be seen. Okay. It is possible that they will survive, but also possible that they will fail. And as considering the short period of time, okay, this is really way too early to make any judgments and to talk about possibilities. So I think saying remains to be seen is the most neutral statement and expression, okay? Well, that's all I want to say on this point. Do I move on to the next point?
Yes.
Actually, before you go on, can I just have, what I have to say fits here. I try to thread this needle the same way. Look at the language at the end of the section I wrote called the structure of the TLD industry. There's a section called size distribution of registries. The last two sentences there is an attempt to sort of balance these two points. I noticed as I was reading it, there's a missing not, but you guys can fill that in. So I invite sort of Kylie and Jordan and others to look at that language and see whether it balances this point, because I think at this point we can only speculate about what the outcome will be, and I just try to present both sides.
Yes, Dan, thank you. We'll take a look at that language.
Okay. So I move to the next point. Market structure.
Jonathan, I don't know how you want to moderate this. I think Carlos said he wants to make a comment on this particular point, and I don't know if David's hand is raised for that same reason. So maybe helpful to go through topic by topic.
Right. So, Carlos, it sounds like your point is relevant to this current conversation, so why don't you go ahead, and then, David, I'll call on you next. But I'm going to assume that you want to speak on this topic as well. And, Kylie, we'll come back to you for your next point.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. My apologies for arriving late. I just want to comment on this point, and I really think that if we should spend a few more words and we could settle this. I don't care if a new TLD fails and disappears. That's perfectly fine. I also think that focusing on size is not the right thing because of the trademarks. I mean, trademarks can survive without any registration forever. If you look at the nice map that Nominet brought out in the style of the London Metro, you have all the trademarks in yellow, very small, but they will survive. There is one thing that I think we should discuss. And that's if a very small TLD does not survive by itself and it goes into a group or a portfolio of another company. I mean, if we're discussing competition here and we're worth the name of competition, we have to put a flag or we have to recommend to look to any tendency of mergers and acquisition in case that a small new GTLD is not sustainable. Even if we don't have the data, I think it's a very relevant point that should be mentioned for new reviews. I hope I made it clear. Thank you very much.
David, go ahead, and then I'll, and Calvin, I guess, and then I'll come back to you, Jordan, to sum up.
Okay, thanks, Jonathan. I'll try and be quick. And this may well be something that Jordan's already covering or thinking of covering, but looking at the industry structure and that 90% of new GTLDs having less than 10,000 registrations, excluding brands, which obviously is important to do, and there where we've excluded them. I was just thinking there we should maybe provide more data on the number of new GTLDs with X registrations, so putting in place a graph, because that way we'd see the distribution of them, and I think then instead of necessarily fixing on the 10,000, it'd be interesting to see how many are 1,000, how many are 500, how many are this, and how many are up to, 500,000. So we've just got a good idea, because that helps us see what modest is in relation to the others, shows the spread, and also if we tie that into specific time, then we've got an evolution over time, which is good for future review teams. That was just my thought and point.
Yeah, thanks, David. In Stan's actual paper, there's not a graph, there's a table that sort of summarizes by, this many have less than 10,000, this many have 10,000 to 50,000, this many have over a million, et cetera. So that data will be there. This document is by necessity the very high-level summaries of those statements, of those data points.
So, Jordan, maybe in this paper you can put a parenthetical or a bracketed thing that a graph will be, because since this is starting to be how you see the narrative going, you might just make references to what we would include. Calvin, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I do get a bit nervous when I start seeing small TLDs of, below 2,000 registrations, because if you start looking at the average selling price of a TLD and you look at the ICANN costs, you're really heading into a territory there where I feel nervous about these things being sustainable at any level. And at the end of the day, people are looking for returns on investment, and even trying to make a TLD, a small TLD of less than 2,000 names work
the ICANN costs is quite difficult, and I think something needs to be said about that. I'm not sure what. Maybe I need to give it a bit more thought. I think something needs to be said.
I guess Jordan and Stan, the question might be is that do we have any data that would help to suggest that the minimum viable scale is based on the costs that we're aware of and estimate us or not or something like that? So Jordan's saying we don't have that data.
Yeah, I mean, to Calvin's point, we have the ICANN cost, which is $25,000 a year, and then presumably some amortization of the initial application fee.
Right.
But, you know, we could look at that and intersect it with wholesale prices. We don't actually have access to the wholesale price data. But, you know, maybe analysis group could look and see for a sample of these really small ones, what's their wholesale price, multiply across, figure out whether they have enough revenue to pay for even the ICANN fees. But I don't, you know, that obviously doesn't reflect the entire cost structure. They're paying for backends as well. And the other important thing on the revenue side that we'd be missing is revenue from premium domains. I know for some of our – we have a number of very small GTLDs, but all of them are positive of ICANN fees at least, and in some cases that's just due to premium revenue.
Okay, Stan, are you raising your hand back on this topic?
Yeah, I think the answer to your question is no, the answer is we don't have that information. I think early on we talked about trying to collect cost data, but I don't know what happened with that. It'd probably be very difficult to obtain. So I think at this point we can only sort of describe what the alternatives are and say it's early innings, and I don't think we can say much more than that. But I think it is worth pointing out that should be a concern at the tail end. I remember actually in our meeting in Washington that Steve Crocker specifically mentioned the issue, the concern of the viability of small PLDs.
Carlos, so what are you suggesting in the chat? I don't want to just ignore this question, but we're...
Yeah, that we can calculate a break-even. I mean, if you're not a brand and you're doing it for defensive reasons and you are not in a portfolio, you are an individual, single new GTLD company or applicant, we can assume that they might have trouble getting a return, as Georgine said. We have the amount that they paid in the books of ICANN, and they probably also paid for some advice for the application and so on, and we can put it just in a placeholder. Look at these very small ones that don't have a business. I can give you an example. And maybe the next report will have to report on some failures. What happens to them is somebody fails and nobody wants to buy it. I mean, we don't need data to assume that that might happen.
Right. I think that's right, that we don't need data to say that it might happen. We just don't have the data to suggest that it is happening or the point at which it would happen. And so I think we're right to flag it. As something to pay attention to, but also as something about which we had insufficient data to draw conclusions. I think that's where we're headed with this conversation. Okay? All right. David and Calvin, I'm assuming those are old hands, and so I'm going to go to Kylie for his second point.
Thank you. Jonathan, thank you. Okay. That is about the market structure. Okay. In Jordan's statement, it says in aggregate, the new GTLD represented a significant portion of growth in domain names since the launch of the new program, roughly equivalent to either legacy GTLDs or CTLDs. Okay.
Sure. Last time in, I believe, in Vienna, we saw the data, which is showed significant portion of registration being parked, okay? It is not to say that those parked data, parked registration, will be abandoned, all of them. Some might be eventually be used. However, it is unknown. Therefore, I suggest to add on to Jordan's statement here is that meanwhile, as data collected so far, well, we can show that is one over 50% and another one over 70% shows that parked registration registrations are of a significant portion of new ones. It raises the question that how many of them are for real usage by internet users instead for speculation or brand name defensive purposes. This needs to be further studied. Basically saying that yes, indeed, the registration volume in new GDLDs are significant. However, because of the massive parking, so how many are for real usage, which means is for the original purpose of ICANN introducing the new GDLD program, is still unknown. So therefore, I basically saying, if we do not know something, we point out, we do not know. So here it says it needs to be further studied. I, again, believe that this makes it neutral and also not to mislead our audience either in Hyderabad or in the future and also put our team on safer ground. So that means we do not make unsupported conclusions. Thank you.
So,
Stan, I put your hand up and then it went down.
Jordan, I think Stan was gonna maybe ask or suggest what I'm about to, which is we're still waiting, and I think you suggested this in chat as well, Jonathan. I think the important piece of data that we're missing. We actually know parking rates in the new GTLDs is quite high. I think we are going to want to call that out regardless of what we study. And so it may be that we want to actually do a summary write-up just on parking because this topic does come up quite a bit. What we don't know, which I think is really important, and actually Carlton's the article that Carlton sent around earlier in the week makes this point, I think, pretty clearly, is what we don't know is what the parking situation looks like in the legacy GTLDs. And so if the speculation is sort of the same in legacy GTLDs and the new GTLDs, then I think we would acknowledge that fact, but basically say, like, okay, well, we're seeing sort of comparable number of registrations in aggregate, and the parking levels are kind of the same in aggregate. So we don't really understand what people are doing registering all these names, but they seem to like the new ones about as much as they like the old ones. If, on the other hand, we see that the parking rates are substantially different between the new and the legacy GTLDs, I think we have to call that out and say, it may be that the use or pattern of renewals or something about the new GTLDs might be different in the future because we see a different parking rate in the new GTLDs than the old one. So we really need that data to understand if this is a different behavior than we see in the legacy GTLDs. And right now we just don't know that.
I would agree with that. So basically saying if we do not know something, we say this needs to be further studied. And that, I think, puts our team on a safer ground.
Yeah, that's right, Kylie. And I do actually think this is an area where, for example, it affects renewal rates. We'll have a lot more information in a few years than we do now because we can see if the renewal rates are similar or different in the new GTLDs versus the legacy GTLDs. as a result. So it's definitely a good area for further study, and hopefully we'll get some more data from NTLD stats between now and when we publish the report, which will allow us to make some more authoritative statements in the short term, too. But I see Stan's got his, or Stan did have his hand up.
I'm inclined to say about what Jordan said, what he said. I think there are two points. One is if the percentages are the same, all our calculations based on ratios are unchanged. That's point one. And the other is I'm hoping that by the time we produce our final report, we will in fact have the parking data and we'll be able to compare legacy and new GTLDs, and we want to speculate about this.
May I also say something? Well, it is important to compare the legacy, the parking rate in legacy GTLDs as well, to compare them with the registration, parked registrations in new GTLDs. However, there is also another phenomenon, which is the world's economic financial situation, especially we, although without specific data by analysis group or Nielsen, that it's widely believed that the parking rate in China is extremely high. Therefore, that relates to the economic and financial situation of China over the last 2 years. So therefore, this could, we compare the legacy GTLD's parking rate with the parking rate of new GTLD's. Also, we would like to look at different period of time because 2 years ago, for example, especially in China, the financial situation is pretty different. So I just to compliment what Stan said is we look at the comparison, but not only between legacy ones and new ones, but also between different time periods. Thank you.
Just a quick response.
Okay, Carly, thank you.
I think we asked, it's at NTLD Stats is doing our parking analysis, is that correct? I think one of the problems we have is that they will not, while they have historical data on parking rates for the new GTLDs, they are unable to give us parking data for the legacy GTLDs over time. They'll only give us a snapshot. Is that correct, Aliza? Hello?
Yes, that's right. Sorry, Stan.
Yeah, and this is Jordan. To Kylie's general point, I think Kylie's correct to point out that the dynamics of the Chinese marketplace have had a substantial impact on domain registrations in general over the past few years. It's unfortunate for the purpose of our analysis that those few years basically exactly coincide with the emergence of the new GTLD program. So one thing we can't do is look at what the new GTLD program looked like before there were a bunch of Chinese speculators in the market, because that period of time never happened. So it is possible, it seems like from Carlson's article, maybe there's that interest is dying down, so it's possible in the future we'll see the dynamics change. But we don't really have a historical baseline in the new GTLDs, at least, to look at.
That's true.
Yes. So therefore, I think we all agree that this needs to be further studied. And, well, of course, we need data. However, if we do not get the data by the end of our study, then at least we point out this data needs to be collected and then leave it for the next review team. And that will be the contribution of our team. Thank you.
That's right, Kylie. Did you have any other questions, Kylie, for Jordan's document?
I distributed in the email. I would like to add a paragraph or two sentences by the end of what Jordan wrote.
Okay. All right, we'll take those in written format and continue to discuss it. Thanks, Jordan, for preparing this document. I think this is just the kind of conversation we need to be having as a team as we try to get to Hyderabad and start presenting our quote-unquote findings and how we frame those findings and what caveats we place on them. So it's an important discussion, and thanks for getting it started, Jordan. We have some other additional papers to discuss. The first one is the price analysis paper. And
that's what I think Wada said he had to leave. I also think he said he was waiting to look at the analysis group phase two report to draw some inferences for his paper, and he didn't get any of the data he needed, so he's going to go back and substantially rework this paper. So I would suggest we just defer this discussion.
Okay. And all right, the next paper, have these efforts had an impact on public perception of the DNS? Whose paper is that? Is that Carlton?
No.
Or Carlos? Oh, that's Wado. Also, wait.
No, this is the Price paper.
That's the old paper. So the next paper, we're going to skip the price analysis paper because we lost our narrator, our repertoire for that. So go to the next one on public perception of the DNS. Carlos, you have your hand up. Okay.
No. I want to agree that we should get an opportunity to read the second report carefully. I got it just before jumping into the plane Tuesday morning, and I think we need a few days to digest, and I think also Jordan's section on pricing that we just finished the paper needs some small editing in view of what I understood from the second analysis group paper. So I don't know if you will schedule a short call for that paper, but I would like to recommend to do it, and I would like to participate if the subgroup does a small discussion on the second document. Thank you.
Thanks, Carlos. It looks like I may have skipped Dehan's paper. I'm sorry, on registrar competition with registries.
Mine is mine paper is policy analysis.
Okay, can we bring that one up? Sorry, this outline format is defeating me here. All right, but that's Wado's paper, Alice.
Pamela, can you bring up the registry policies document, please?
All right. Excellent. Yeah, and the floor is yours.
Okay. First of all, our team performed this project as part of a non-price competition analysis. So in this analysis, we divided researching into two roles. One is about privacy policy, another one is related to registration policy in general. It includes top 30 new GTLDs, and for pairing purposes only, we choose to make comparison with the top five ccTLDs. Data for this analysis was collected by ICANN staff, Elisa and her team. They collected data from registry's policy and put it in a spreadsheet divided into some topic with what we agreed to how to arrange the data. So researching find that most, big number of these registries, 90%, have published privacy policy. Generally, personal data protection is provided. 66.6 of this registry would not share that data with third parties. Just one number of them, 6.6, are pretty clear that they will share that data with third parties. Actually, they have right to sell that data. Also, 33.3 registries have information in their policies regarding collecting of cookies. Five compared ccTLDs have rules under which they are not sharing personal data with third parties. ccTLDs have a different policy regarding who is. So in that area, we find few differences what data they are collecting and publishing. Regarding jurisdictions, there was no any requirements except only for .new OIC. They are in for that domain name registry. You need to have an address in New York City, for no matter if you are a private person or a company. Another thing, all these registries have a specific compliance procedure. They have some specific address for that purpose or online form. Also, they have right to act in a case of abusive usage of the domain name. None of these registries have regulation regarding park domain names. We look for their data later after we finished prior researching. So that will be in a short. If you have any questions or comments, here.
Dan, if you had to sum this up in two sentences, would it be to say that the policies and the aggregate are not substantially different in the new GTLD from the legacy GTLDs?
So generally, yes. Yeah, because most of policies and rules are required by ICANN through prior experience, especially for HUIs and for applicant guidebooks. So they are, I don't know, in most cases are pretty unique.
So I guess the question, the high level question then, is whether or not differentiation in these policies has been effective in providing non-price competition. In other words, you know, choice, is there sufficient differences in these policies that they might be the basis for someone choosing a new GTLD over a legacy TLD? And my sense from your presentation is that there isn't.
I can check that, I don't know, something deeply and find some conclusions regarding differences between top legacy GTLDs and these 30 new GTLDs.
Megan thinks that because of simplicity, there might be some instances where they're representing a valid alternative to a legacy because of some specific policy decision. Um, And Carlton, you're making a point about toe and TV. Maybe you want to speak up and say what your point is verbally.
Okay, Jonathan, there are a couple CCTLDs that are positioned almost as alternatives to, not almost, they are positioned as alternatives to GTLDs. We talked the case of .co and .tv, and I was just trying to put into the conversation how we would look at these within the context of the question from Dijan.
So suggestion to include them in analysis.
Okay. Other questions for Dejan about this? So, I mean, I guess I'm trying to understand Megan's point. So I don't know that she's disagreeing with me, Dejan. I guess I'm interested in trying to see if we can draw some conclusion about whether either individually or in the aggregate we see sufficient differences in policies to represent a form of non-price competition. I think that's the question we need to answer here. So maybe I can take this offline with you, Dan.
Okay. You can argue this offline and try to improve some additional researching.
Thank you, Dan, very much for your presentation.
Okay, you're welcome.
Stan, price analysis.
Before we get to that, there's a separate question which I've actually already raised today on, which is, are consumers aware of these differences and do they act on them? And I believe he's tracking down some data from the Nielsen survey to see whether we can address that question. Is that correct?
Yeah, I was trying yesterday to find some data in Nielsen survey, but it's not so directly connected with these findings. They are in some way connected, but not pretty straight.
I'll try to describe it. Yeah, if these are supposed to be issues of non-price competition, it would be interesting if we could find out whether consumers are aware of it and act on it. And I guess that may be very difficult.
Yeah, I'll try to do it. Okay.
Jonathan, you may be on mute.
Sorry, I wasn't talking. I was waiting for this paper to come up, at which point I thought Stan would take the floor and just give a couple of bullet points to us.
This is very preliminary, partly because we don't have the data. As I understand it, one of the projects that analysis group is working on at this point is a comparison. As you all know, we do not have good price data for legacy GTLDs, which is a significant handicap, and I believe that one of the conclusions we've reached is I hope that in the future ICANN will be collecting that to facilitate this kind of analysis. What I understand the analysis group is doing at this point is comparing for a sample of new GTLDs their wholesale prices with not the actual prices, but with the price caps of the legacy GTLDs. And my understanding is their analysis, that the calculations thus far show that the weighted average of the host of the new GTLD prices is somewhat higher than the weighted average of the price caps of the legacy GTLDs. And I try here to sort of try to tease some implications out of that. It's very hard since we really don't know what the prices look like, but I tried to suggest something about that at the end of this. But it's still preliminary. It's the last paragraph, and I'm not sure what we can say. I try to say something. I guess if people should just be encouraged.
Thanks, Stan. And I go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, so the point I make is it's not clear that this suggests the price cap should be removed. On the other hand, it doesn't suggest they shouldn't. And then I make the other point, which is that it's possible that there might be price variation across TLDs unrelated to competition issues, because I point out in the monopolistic competition literature, market may be quite competitive, but firms that have relatively small shares nonetheless may have high prices per unit of output, and that's the sort of last paragraph of this. But this is, we're waiting for the data before I can fill this out.
And Stan, what sort of data do you think would be necessary to draw the conclusion that the price caps are creating unfair competition for the new GTLDs?
You've raised that before, and I think that's much harder. Jonathan's point has been perhaps the effect of the price caps by keeping those prices low has made it what? Has given them, in some sense, unfair advantage in the sense that their prices are low, and therefore it makes it very difficult for the new guys to compete. That's not in here.
And they can afford to be low because of the economy of scale.
I'm sorry. Say again.
And they can afford for them to be low because of their economies of scale.
Yeah. I don't think I can reject that idea. I haven't really thought about that. I think the way I can think about the caps is that the caps are, I presume, intended to prevent, quote, monopolistic pricing. And we have sort of two problems.
Right.
One, we don't observe the actual prices, number one. They could be at or below the caps in principle. And the second is because of the caps, we don't know what prices they would have wanted to charge had they been not price capped. So the example I always give is, suppose the cap is 10, you would want, before the new GTLDs entered, you wanted 20. After they have entered, you want to charge 15. All you can observe is 10. And therefore, you don't
right.
know, there's no way of identifying any effect of the entry on competition if the price, the point being, if the price cap is binding both before and after entry, you really have no data about the effect of competition.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know how to resolve it. I suspect that the biggest proponent of the price cap being removed right now would be somebody like Donuts. So it's interesting. I don't know Carlton, you're right about the price caps being a third rail, and I completely get that. I'm just we're talking about all these small number registration registries, et cetera, that don't enjoy that same level of economy of scale, and so therefore can't charge prices that are competitive with the price cap. And I wonder if a new registration only removal of the price cap or something would create a better test environment for what the actual price of the TLD ought to be in this new world.
To Carlton's point about the third rail, that doesn't scare me. I ride the Washington Metro every day.
Go on, Stan, go on.
I guess the question is that, I mean, there's this sort of artificial predation caused by this low, potentially, I mean, it's hard to understand, but by this price cap and I wonder, is it worth it? Elisa, I mean, this is so tied up in VeriSign's interests. I wonder if they would be willing to share wholesale price data for us to better understand. I don't know. You're the only people that matter in this conversation.
Jonathan, I was going to go exactly where you just went, whether or not VeriSign, which is in their interest, would share the wholesale data. But just to add to your point about why it would be important to have that, we've been talking a lot about the survivability and the viability at what point. And Calvin made the point that there are some sunk costs, which he labeled the ICANN costs. And I think I know what Calvin means by that. I don't think the size, the number of registrations is quite fancy all that much, because you have the portfolio operators and they can have loss leaders for a good business reason and so on. So I'm not really much into seeing how we're going to get much from that. But if we knew what the carrying cost is just to run a registry from these ICANN costs, as Calvin says, plus whatever ones they were, then maybe hearing something about the wholesale price from VeriSign would be helpful in the analysis. So I support the view that you're making always, that maybe if we had more of that information, it would give us a better, a firmer standing to make that argument. So I totally agree with that. Notwithstanding, I know the price caps is the political third rail.
Jordan, you have your hand up.
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. So I have a complex series of thoughts, and know we only have 9 minutes, but just want to make the following observations. First is, with regards to VeriSign in particular, just people may or may not remember this, but .com is a unique contract in that the price caps in the .com agreement are not set by ICANN, but instead set by the U.S. Department of Justice. And so that's a little bit unique in that even if ICANN decided on a general framework for GTLDs, it might still not affect what happens with .com in particular. So that's just something for people to keep in mind, and also probably has some bearing on how VeriSign thinks about this space, because it's not just an ICANN issue. Secondly, the thing I was going to say is I actually don't think, because of that, I think that the really interesting effect on the price caps is actually not on Common Net, but on the sort of next tier of GTLDs, possibly starting with .org or more likely BizInfo, et cetera. Those TLDs also have a price cap today, and as Jonathan just sort of said, you know, there may be this effect of sort of artificial predation going on, where it could be that, you know, Neustar or Afilias, it would really prefer to price those domains at like $15 or something like that, and they might see significantly fewer registrations as a result of that, but more overall revenue. You know, they might find a sweeter spot on the demand curve than they currently are experiencing. But they're basically prohibited from trying to figure out what that would look like today due to the price caps. And therefore, when registrants go to buy domain names, they have these domains like Biz, like Info, and, you know, to a lesser extent, to a significant degree, ComNet and Org, but that's a separate effect, that are priced, you know, perhaps quite a bit lower than market forces would necessarily demand. And it's possible that has some effect on receptiveness of the sort of pricing structures of new GTLDs. One thing I don't think we understand very well is the sensitivity of the market to price. So sort of, we don't understand what a sort of generalized domain name demand curve actually looks like. One thing that we may want to ask AG to do, and I think maybe I asked this at some point in the past, is to look and see if there's any correlation between wholesale prices for the TLDs where they have that information and registration volume. I certainly imagine that at the extremes it does. I know that XYZ, for example, which I think is the biggest of the new gTLDs, had a number of instances where they've sold names for free or for 2 cents or something like that. Obviously, that's driven a lot of their volume. But even taking outliers like that out of the equation, do we see that domains that cost, you know, $20, do they sell a lot more of them than TLDs that where the wholesale price is $30? I don't think we really understand that effect between price and demand right now. And I think it would be interesting for us to understand that better, although we also don't have very much time to get to the bottom of it.
That feels like Data Analysis Group might have, actually, since they went and did the screen scraping, at least in the samples they did. They did screen scraping, and they have volume for those TLDs, right? In theory, that comparison could be made. I don't know. Stan, go ahead. You might be on mute, Stan.
Yeah, the point that Jordan just made, I think, is a little more complicated because as I go back to monopolistic competition, it's entirely possible in a market that's very competitive that you observe, firms with small shares having high prices per unit, but not necessarily reflecting the effect of competition, but the fact that the per unit costs are higher for more specialized producers. So you find, books that have very small. I know a publisher that publishes books that only sells basically to libraries and sells them for like $500 to $1,000 each. It's not necessarily because they have any market power. It's just that their target audience is libraries.
Very specialized. And
they charge higher prices than people who try to sell bestsellers. So there are a lot of moving parts here. It's kind of hard to disentangle the effect of competition of price on demand without taking into account essentially the business practices or the business plan of the supplier. So maybe we can just speculate.
Stan?
Yes.
Yeah, Stan, I mean, is there some neutral way that you could take a shot at laying out a couple of paragraphs that just kind of discuss these things, and including the fact that they're possible, but that we don't have enough data for, so that to somehow summarize that this conversation, that we thought about it, but that we were unable to make a conclusion?
Yeah, the piece up on the screen is a sort of early attempt to do that. I think what you're suggesting is that I should go back to this and expand it. Anybody else could take a quick look at this and has any comments on this, I'd appreciate it. But I can take what's on the screen and try to respond to your point, Jonathan.
All right. Thanks. Thank you, Stan. And then we have Hal, Carlton, and Jamie on public perception of the DNS. Can you guys take the floor?
Okay.
Sure. This is Jamie. I took my hand down because I was just typing myself in the comments. But as Stan says, there are a lot of moving parts. There is the agreement that DOJ and Department of Commerce reached with VeriSign on the price cap. The price cap has changed in the past. It's likely to change in the future, and that's the same with other legacy gTLDs that are subject to price caps. I think my sense is that this is an opportunity for us to raise questions and acknowledge the paucity of data. And included in those questions would be the impact, any impact that any change in the price cap may or may not have had on on the overall market and the new GE space in particular. But and then to Jordan's point about DOJ's analysis, yes, DOJ and Commerce do this, do an analysis on whether or not to adjust, but they use different criteria that have nothing to do with the new GTLD program. We, you know, that's obviously an input, you know, for example, one of the biggest criteria for them and whether or not their price cap can be raised is whether they need to invest more to improve the security and stability of the global DNS. And so that's what they need it for security and stability. They need more revenue for security and stability, which is not really something that we look at, we don't look at directly because we don't look at.
No, that's the thing. I recognize it's a sticky issue, and so I mean, I don't mean to make too fine a point of it. I was only saying that our job is to look at whether or not the new GTLD program introduced competition, and so it's a real question to ask whether or not the price caps had an adverse impact on that new competition. That's all. That's all I'm suggesting, and it's a little it's sort of the same question
the
DOJ has.
I agree with that.
Different perspective. All I'm saying is that I'm asking Stan maybe to pose the question and then conclude we were unable to answer it, but that we acknowledge the fact that the question exists. That's all, because I think it will come up.
Yep. No, I'm sorry. I thought it was a broader issue. I apologize.
Okay.
Thanks.
Now onto your homework.
What homework?
All right, I guess I thought you were part of this paper, but maybe not. Carlton, Howe, and Calvin. I had it in my head that Jordan, Jamie was part of it.
No, I'm part of another paper that I'm
folks, Carlton, can you take the okay. Carlton, can you take the floor? I need to wrap up here quickly if you can.
Okay, Carlton here. So we had to restructure this paper because in the last conversation, the idea was that we would speak. The question was really more towards awareness and trust, and trying to figure out how awareness increase or decrease trust in the main name system. So we still kept the top level question, but you see some sub questions there that we had. Have awareness increased year on year? Greater awareness of the new GTLDs increased trust. That is the relationship between awareness and trust. What attributes, practices of new GTLDs have led to increased trust? Are alternative identified entities more trustworthy? This is something that there's still some questions about whether or not it is important to have it here. So just take it that this is still that question is still under revision as to whether or not we can keep it here. So the findings, awareness has increased year on year. This is between the 2015 year and the 2016 year. Interestingly, the data from the surveys suggests that while in the consumer segment, awareness has increased year on year, in the registrant segment, it has actually decreased. Modest decreases, but there are decreases nonetheless, which is itself a little bit of a surprise. And you see the numbers there represented in that statement. What we notice, though, if you look at the various areas of the globe, awareness is not even across. Awareness is increased more so in Europe and North America than in Asia Pacific. We don't have the awareness data for Africa and South America. At least we couldn't find them to extract from the surveys. So those are left blank for that. But if you look at the registrant awareness, you will see where the in Asia Pacific it was flat, and then everywhere else, Europe, North America, it decreased, except for South America. The largest decrease apparently is in Africa, where the awareness data went down by 20 percentage points. A few things to notice from that. Awareness is highest for geographically targeted details by country for consumers. Consumer awareness seems independent of the time the new detailed is delegated and live or in operation. Awareness doesn't seem to track to the number of registrations in any domain. And big one, consumer awareness remains higher for legacy domain and continues to grow. I'm not sure that is too surprising. So then awareness and trust in TLDs. The data is showing that the average consumer trust in new TLDs went up slightly, went down slightly. And here's something. Less than half of the new TLDs, including the geo-targeted TLDs, seem to be trustworthy by the majority of registrants. So there's a set that is trustworthy. They seem to follow the earlier prediction that those that are related to specific functions like email and so on, photography, they seem to have greater trust among registrants, among consumers. Registrant trust levels lowest in North and South America and highest in Asia, followed by Africa. And registrants generally have higher trust levels than consumers. And you see the average consumer trust there in the next set of numbers. Trustworthiness, consumers versus registrants. Trustworthiness, and you might ask, why trustworthiness? Because that's the data that we have. And most of you will actually agree that the word trustworthiness is a compound. It represents some other factors, but however you see it, if you look at the data and look at the pictorial, you will see that generally more of the trust is invested in those GTLDs that are related to functions. So you see news, email, online, website, and so on. There they have levels of trust in the registrant segment. It is much lower in the consumer segment. We asked the question, what attributes, practices of new GTLDs have led to increased trust? Restrictions increase trust, and furthermore, purchase restrictions add to that trust increase. So if you look at the data a little bit more, you will see that while consumers, while registrants were more opposed to having restrictions in the 2015 survey year, by the 2016 survey year, that number was decreasing and more registrants were looking for restrictions. So across the globe, 50% of consumers believe that you should have more restrictions on purchase of new GTLDs. It varies in places. Latin America and North America are in favor of stricter restrictions. 25% overall favor strict purchase restrictions for geo-related. Again, variations in the regions. Some say that trust is vested in the GTLD because they expect the content to be related somehow to the intent of the GTLDs. So reputation and familiarity are also attributes of trustworthiness. And registrant opposition to restriction for new GTLDs increase for some with implied purpose. What that means is that if as soon as they figure out what the purpose or the implied purpose of the GTLD, then they favor higher restrictions on registrations in those areas. The next question, sub-question, alternate identities more trustworthy. As I said, there's still some question of as to whether or not this should be here, but just for reporting, one in four report an alternative identity is in lieu of registering an additional domain name, South America and Europe mostly. One in six say they did not renew a domain name in favor of using an alternative method. More than half say they are less likely to register a new domain name or renew an existing domain name because of having alternative identities. And they say that in terms of alternative identities, cost and ease of use rates are the principal reasons for them to not register or renew a domain name. Registrants in Africa, Asia, and lesser so in South America are more likely responsive to alternative identities. I wouldn't want to go into any recommendations or review here because those are still being discussed in the group. That's about all I have to say here.
Thanks, Carlton. Does anybody have any questions for Carlton about these findings? Okay. If you have comments, then get them to Carlton writing here within the next few days, because otherwise we're going to start to try to move these findings into prose, which will be tough to change, except expressionistically.
Hey, this is Drew. Just real quick question for Carlton.
Yeah.
Carlton, I was wondering for section 3, would you want to include awareness there? Or the way you're defining attributes and practices, are you not doing something? Would you not want to look at something as far as awareness because you're just looking at specific attributes of the GTLD itself? Just because we do, you know, we have seen that awareness and familiarity go hand in hand with trust.
I'm not sure I understand the question, Jamie.
This is Drew.
Drew, sorry.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, so for section 3, when you're analyzing parts of the survey that are related to consumer trust, and so you're looking at it as, you know, attributes of the new GTLD and whether they have restrictions, because we've seen that the consumers there tends to be a correlation between trust and restrictions.
Yes.
You also, in that section, still want to cover this whole premise that, you know, the more familiar the consumers are with the GTLD, the more likely they are to trust it?
I think so, yes. I see the question now, yes. That could be one of the attributes, familiarity and all that. So we could expand it onto that, on the number.
Okay.
Two.
Yeah.
Yes, I accept that. I accept that, yes.
true. That's a good point. Any other questions for Carlton? So as everyone is seeing, there's quite a bit that we need to cover and a lot to go over. So it really is important for you to provide feedback to folks whenever possible when they're circulated to the list, so that we can make these discussions really focused on where there's some dissent, because we're coming up in Hyderabad very quickly. I'm working with staff on what some slides might look like for the engagement session, sort of based on Laureen's high-level narrative and now Jordan's high-level narrative, and so we'll need to get to those issues. One possibility is that we should try to go weekly on our plenary calls. So I guess I'm interested in people's thoughts on increasing the frequency of the plenary calls in order to become more ready for Hyderabad, which is coming up very soon. Would people be available to do a plenary call next week in addition to their sub-team call? I guess give me a check mark in Adobe Connect if you would be available to do an additional plenary call next week. Or a red X if you're not. Maybe not everybody's understanding how to use Adobe Connect, but is there anyone on the phone that feels strongly that they couldn't make a plenary call next week in addition to their sub-team call? It looks like we're headed toward having one, just judging from the check marks we're getting. So, Alice, I guess let's try to do an additional plenary so that we can get more of these readouts done before Hyderabad, so this staff will be sending out a doodle poll to try and get that scheduled. Okay. Great. Thanks, folks. Thanks for the call. I know these are long, but the conversations are good because we need to price caps aren't the only third rail in our discussion. There are a lot of issues that we're going to be raising at Hyderabad, and there's a lot of people in the community with strong opinions about them. So let's try to all get on the same page as much as we possibly can before we get to India. Thanks, Doc, for being on the call, and look for a doodle poll from staff on the next plenary. Thanks, and I'll see you on your sub-team calls.
Thanks, Jonathan.